This week on Potlatch, Muktuk Marston.
Hooray! I'm a radioactive Eskimo with a radioactive mother, a radioactive sister, and a radioactive brother. You may think that you're hot, I don't want to put you down, but we have the highest count found in any old town. I am a radioactive Eskimo with a radioactive mother, a radioactive sister, and a radioactive brother. Bring on the Geiger counter, bring on the old hard rain, bring on the army engineers, the answer's just the same. I am a radioactive Eskimo with a radioactive mother, a radioactive sister, and a radioactive brother. My wife can't suckle our babies, the milk must come from cans. My wife's too radioactive, say we're real atom fans. I am a radioactive Eskimo with a radioactive mother, a radioactive sister, and a radioactive brother. When we eat the caribou, the moss the caribou eat is rained on good by the dirty rain, it's radioactive meat. I am a radioactive Eskimo with a radioactive mother, a radioactive sister, and a radioactive brother.
Peter LaFarge, now Muktuk Marston.
Hey, back. I gave up the acreage in 1941. I was the first contingent of the Army. The Army advertised for men who had Arctic experience. I asked them to come to Washington, D.C. I went down, and they said, we'd like to use you. We're going to have trouble, that big, little-known land of Alaska. Would you go there? I said, I'd be happy to. I went away from home when I was 15. I went to Nome, Alaska. And I said, I'd go back up there. And we knew the enemy was coming. We weren't ready for him. I said, Fort Richardson, Elmdorf. No Fort Richardson then. And we weren't ready for anything. And I'd been out with the Eskimos. And I went to General Simon Bolivar Buckner, Jr., the only general in Alaska, and I said, I can organize the Eskimos, there's 30,000 of them along the shores of Bering Sea and the Arctic coast, and they'd be good eyes and ears for the Army. He said, I have no authority to authorize you to organize those Eskimos. Well, the truth of our learning, he was born deep down in Mississippi. He didn't want anything but he didn't want even yellow or black. Now, that's the story. They would cut that out, I should there. Anyway, I did what a soldier shouldn't do. A general, you say, yes, sir. And there's some reason for that. I didn't. I went over his head and went to the territorial Governor Greening, and I met the greatest man ever was in Alaska. Governor Greening, he became a senator later on. He went for it. And the general said no. Well, the governor was a classmate of Roosevelt. He went out to see the president. He came back and turned the general over backwards, and that was my fight came with the Army. You say yes, and that's the reason for it. You've got to say yes, sir, to a superior officer. You go into the battle, you can't argue. You say yes, sir, you go in. And there's reason for that, but I never broken down. I rose to the rank by mutiny in the National Guard, and I stayed there most of the time. Anyway, I fought elements within the Army and outside when I organized the Scouts of Alaska. I went out. I was alone. I traveled by dog team to the great villages over Alaska, the great people of Alaska. This is 36 years ago I'm talking to you now. And I told them the problem. And Judge Diamond stopped me in Anchorage. And he said, Major, he says, Judge Diamond. He said, you did something we thought never could be done. You made soldiers, those Eskimos, and they stayed soldiers. We thought they were childlike. Well, pretty soon I met Roden in Nome. I was headquarters in Nome then. I was organizing ladies to eyes and ears. A scout, I mean, a scout's duty is observe, report, harass, retard, and fall back when overpowered. That's the duty of a scout. Roden came in, he was running for delegate to Congress at the same time Bartlett ran. Greening had sent Bartlett in. He was a Democrat, but Roden was a Republican. He was a law officer of the territory of Alaska then. And I went to breakfast. I'm telling you about the troubles I had. I had troubles. started from the time I went over rode the general. I mean, I didn't say yes, sir. And he picked his breakfast up from the counter and took over and sat across the table for me. He said, when are you going to start your political campaign? They tried to call my scout organization their political campaign and get rid of it. The Eskimo was an economic slave. They paid him 5 cents an hour, that's all, over, understood. They couldn't sit in the theater, no, except for one corner. They had restaurant signs up, no natives allowed. I tore their goddamn signs down, and I let them sit in the theater where they wanted to, and I took over. We were in their land, and because we were doing them wrong, we were. They're economic slaves. And Roden said to me, when are you going to start your political campaign? I said, Mr. Roden, he was the Attorney General of Territory of Alaska then. I said, Mr. Roden, I don't like the tone of your voice, and I don't like what you, what do you mean? We were carrying sidearms then, we had to, 45. And he said, when are you going to start running guns out ahead of me to get votes for your friend Bartlett? And I said, stand up, get up. Four or five people. I had to take them. I was alone in the whole deal and I, in that time of organization meetings. I said, let me tell you, you don't understand these people. I've contacted 1,000. They've already signed up the same oath they told you to take to defend their shores. I don't want to tell you about your trouble you're in now. You interfere with a military organization in time of war and I approve it on your defender's death and I will shoot you myself. You understand you get in front of this army? He's shaking like a leaf now. I had a gun right here. I said, I'm not going to do it now. I'll have a trial, and if I win, I'll shoot you. That's all. You get out of the way of this thing. He said, I'm your friend. He's shaking all over. I had to tell that to three high-ranking fellows who were going to stop. I reported to the governor. He was my, I was transferred to military to him as military aide. And I reported to him. He said, let him have it. They've been holding those boys down long enough. I couldn't stop them. And he went out with me for 10 days to visit the Eskimo villages. And they said, yes, we'd be happy to be Uncle Sam man. And he got back to Nome, and he said to me, turned to me on the streets of Nome, expect the enemy any time then, there was jittery there. He said, you are the governor in the Arctic, build a native army, run it. When you get in trouble, call on me. It was, we had only a single motor job, it was hard to get from one place to another. And that was it, that was a verbal orders commanding order, VOCO. And with those orders, I went out, I went to work. I traveled the dogs from village to village. I traveled in 6 below weather, wintertime, when that's where they're afraid to go. I froze dogs. But the enemy was down the Aleutians. They were coming up, and I had to get them. I'm Sedri Vadim Pur. I'm publishing a book right now of his. He was three artists came to Nome, and they met me in the Wallace Hotel. And they knew I was going out to run supplies to these natives. Pay the bell. He said, well, go with you. Well, I said, I'll charge you $20 as a territorial boat. That's board and room and quarters. And I said, it's a poor boat. It's only 50 feet just to make it. But I got to go. It's the best boat I could get. We want to go. Well, we took off. We hit a bitumen sea. It was rolling high. We hit Sledge Island off Nome, and we parked overnight there. And I called the... I had two lap ladders and an Eskimo with my crew. And I said, let's get going. He said, it's rough out there beyond the island.
You are.
So Henry Vadim Pur, the great artist, he had to go. I said, get going. Turn the motors over, we go. If you don't want to go back to Nome, I'll get a crew, we'll go. Well, they won't turn down, so we hit a terrible sea. And we did well to survive it. And we turned into Keller, who was going in there. And Henry came to me, the great artist. He says, Major, he says, my two friends, artists, are afraid to go with your father. I said, they have a right to be afraid. It's a very dangerous trip. I told you I had a 50-50 chance to make it, but I have no choice. I got these couple of thousand men signed up, and I got to get guns to them. And they're going for now. What do you do now? The enemy's down in the Aleutians waiting for us to come, and we got to go. I said, that goes for you too, Henry? He says, no, Major, I'm going to the top of the world or the bottom of the ocean with you. And the other two left, and he stayed with me. And he wrote a book, and I just sees Alaska by Henry Vadim Pur. The last half is The Cruise of the Ada. That's the boat I had. I just had it painted, and I'm writing the book for him. The last, I promised I'd get it done, and the historian was going to do it for me, but he died, and it dropped. Then I read a piece of Robert Service that said, A pal's last need is a thing to heed. A promise made is a debt unpaid. I said, Christ, I got to do this job. He got me on two counts. He was my pal. We slept on the front of the boat for 6 weeks under a big skin boat with our sleeping bags. We talked about ships and wax and women and how the Eskimo would survive in the world to come and all these things. We would become buddies. He died, and I hadn't done it. Well, I rallied after I read this story of Robert Service of pal's last need is a thing to heed, a promise made of death unpaid, and I said, I'll publish it. I wrote my publishers to publish the book. I'm going to give you this Men of the Thunder. And I got a price for $2,000 on it, and I got a picture made, painting, and it's going to be a good story, his story, The Cruise of the Ada. He wrote about a great people, the same people I wrote about. I'm trying to give a background to the great Eskimo people. They have no background. They don't know much of anything. This book tells the story of the beginning of their famous rise to fame, fortune, and power they've got now. Started with the ATG. That's the first time they ever organized. They spoke four different languages. But I made good with all of them. My Muckluck telegraph carried this message ahead of me. The time I got them, they talked to them, they signed up. I never missed one man. I signed up 1,000. I signed up 4,000. Never missed a man. That's the best recruiter they ever had. 1 week I got 1,000 men. And they were in the canneries down in the Aleutians. And I met them in the canneries and sat them up group by group. At the Good News Bay, they had the platinum mine there. And they were mining a certain strategic metal with the platinum. And we lost 95% of our supply by war at that time, and we had to get more. And Johnson was the manager of the mine, and the Olson brothers owned it. And he said, we're going to shut this mine down. I've got 60 men here, and one launch with a hand grenade and a machine gun could kill us all. And that's true. And destroy $1 million dredge. He said, I've cost $1 or twice, and he can't give us any help. I said, I'll give you supplies. I was organizing the Scouts of Alaska under the ATG, Alaska Territorial Guard, under the governor, it was. And I talked to them. They had them all together there in a place called the Kashim. Kashim means men's meeting place in Eskimo. And I said, I'll give you 60 men. I knew they were going to go off. I told them what I was doing, and then I'd not return to the shores. I said, all you stand up. I'll give you the oath of a soldier, but I'll say it was. And you defend this place, and I'll get the guns and ammunition to you. They all took the oath, all 60 of us. There's your men, I said. I'll get the guns to you. And I had trouble getting the supplies out. I couldn't get any transportation. And a submarine chaser came into Nome. This is back in 42. 41.
Yep.
And I talked to Drayton Cox, who was the captain. I said, I'm going, where are you going? I'm going back to Dutch Harbor. I said, you go right down. I got to run supplies down to Nunavak out of Good News Bay, where the platinum mine was. Will you take me? He says, I will. Then he called back and said, we'll call the Navy. I said, the hell you will. I've been all through your Navy and your Army. I get no results. I haven't got a loan. I can't get 6 copies out of anything. And I thought you were a great scout. You're going to take me. He says, you can go and have your guns on at midnight. And I'm pulling out. But if my radio opens, you'll go with me. You don't open the radio when you got submarines in the Bering Sea because they can face you. And I said, that's the deal. I said, how long since you heard from your Navy? 10 days. And I'll go. We made it to Liberty to Nunavak Island, a big story. Then we come to Good News Bay. It's a beautiful bay in there. And there's a ship waiting to go up to Bethel, only 35 miles from Bethel. But they're waiting for a river pilot to come down. They've been in 3 days, running out of oil. So we got to go back to Seattle, load of military supplies. I said, open your wigwag to us, to talk to us. And I said, open your your radio and talk to them up there. No, it's against regulations. Well, I've never been whipped down yet. I said, well, if you won't, if they won't. I went ashore and got a ham radio and I talked to Bethel. I said, come on down. 3 hours out of River Pond down, took that ship up there. Go clear back to Seattle, all that supplies. The regulations said, don't call, but I did the right thing. And I gave her the goods. And then he said to me, at the end of Good News Bay, he said to me, will you take responsibility? I don't know why they kept the ship, did they? How did they do that? But I said, this is the best thing you're doing, deliver these guns.
Frank.
You're doing this war. What does the chart say? Keep it up as it go on in there. We were looking at this icebergraph. That shows the bottom. Christ, we saw that shore come after Venus. There's a big sand dike in there. It came in 5 feet again. We drew 20 feet of water. Oh, I was sick. He was sick. We know there's in there. But he said, when you take responsibility, go on in there, the chart says that. Well, we sent the crew in. They were from New York City. They didn't know anything about ice. And they came back with the supplies. There's ice in there. I said, let me get in there. There's fresh ice. I got in there. I said, open up, full blast, and hit that shore hard. We break the ice wide open. And we unloaded our guns to get back to this ice closing laws. And I did just that. I delivered the guns and ammunition. And I followed through with that kind of work all the time. And I had to clean up the Arctic. They were economic slaves, these fellows were, powered down. And I cleaned it all up for them. But I created a lot of enemies in Athens. And when I went against the General Simon Bolivar Buckner Jr., that was the beginning. They hounded life out of me. And they had a reason, because when you go into battle, the superior officer gives the order, they don't question, they go. They say, yes, sir. Well, I've never been whipped out of that. They missed my record up very good in the Army, but I built an Army.
Show me where you're going. You show me. I'll go see my other brother.
I'll tell you a good story. The greatest man I ever met, I'm rushing down the Yukon. My boat froze on the ice. I went to the docks. I'm rushing down the Yukon, and I'm going down to Androsky, a place. It's called St. Mary's now. And my dog musher, that's the most. He said, Major, a very interesting man live here, about 2 miles out of Androsky. I go see him. He's parked, climbed up about 20 foot steps. He's in sleep in the afternoon on his bunk. Nice Eskimo family. And he was lying down, and I talked to him. I said, tell me. He says, my father, he was fired by a Russian soldier at St. Michael's to an Eskimo. He was half Eskimo, half Russian. Big head, small fella. And I told him what he's doing there, organize and defend the shores of Alaska. He says, I want to kill Jap. I said, you know what I want. He said, many times I hung up here. Jap out there getting our fish. Going on 100 years ago, this was. And I said, you're the kind of man I want. But I said, you're a sick man. He says, no, I'm just resting. And he said, who say I'm sick? When you lie down, I'm just resting. Well, that's all right. He got up, and he said, I said, you got no eyes to see the shoe. Well, who says that? He says, take the gun off him.
Right.
He takes the gun off and went out of steps. I said, pick out that can down there. Put a shot right there. I got no eyes to see what I said. But right in the middle of it. I said, but he's bow-legged, and I said, but Paul, you got no legs to carry you. He says, Major, I'm not running. I shoot him when I get here. He jumped 3 hurdles with his own knife. I said to my Eskimo dogmas, go down the plane, get an NPL rifle, 100 such rounds of ammunition, and a shoulder pack, 18 years. And I put it on him, I said, you're a soldier. Those are the greatest men I met in the Arctic, and they're all like that. They ready to defend their shores. We treat them as child like. They're so nice and so simple. They were great men. And I had under service, under arms, 4,000 men. You'll see in my picture that I made that's been used in South Canada last week, it was. It showed the Eskimos under arms at Nome, at Farrell, 150. I had 10% of the population in the scouts of Alaska, ATG, Alaska Territorial Guard. And here they're marching, and here's their uniform. Their uniform is a khaki that this World War II wouldn't wear. Their helmets were World War I helmets. Their shoe packs were used shoe packs, the Enfield rifle. The title cost was $25, but they had a free decor. They walked with a real map. And the general, I showed it to the general here during the war. They said, look at that. Great attitude they have. I said, General, patriotism, happiness comes from the inside out, not from the outside in. $35 in the cost. It costs $1,500 quill, man, today. Modern rifle. That scouts today, under the National Guard, they work. They've got the most modern equipment there is. And the Army says they're the finest soldier they ever had for Arctic duty. They do this white stuff. And they're great men. And I had not 4,000 as I had in arms. I had 30,000. The women did the cooking. The kids ran the messages. The old men ran the traps when the boys were on duty. The 4,000 I had. And the Army would have to have all this stuff to do that. I, when the war, when we started delivering guns to the Russian soldiers were camped in Nome. They went to Fairbanks and got there, right here, got their planes and flew them to Nome, and then when the weather was clear, they fly them on to Androsky in Russia, and on down to the front. The Russians were fighting their back to the wall, and Germans had them there. That's the beginning of World War II. And these guns went right, these planes went into action fast, right through the line. And, I had not 4,000, but 30,000. The women knew all the planes, the enemy planes, they knew everything. They watched for them, and I was well organized there. And the only thing I was, we had, the Jap balloons came over.
Yeah, that's me.
Here's the whole story on that. We were bombing the hell out of the Japs, and they couldn't retaliate. They're losing faith. So they made big Jap moves out. Right there. And they called all the children out. The people, they said, this will destroy Los Angeles. This will destroy Chicago. Hooray! They take off these balloons. Well, the gas, the wind turns from Baltimore to Alaska. And we had about 18 that picked up. And it was very secret. My Eskimo scouts picked them up. Turned them over to the Army intelligence. They wouldn't say anything about it, but it was very secret because they're afraid they'd go to carry German warfare. They could drop. They had look like a milking machine in a way. They could drop. When they lose weight, velocity, the aluminum would disappear. They'd come down. When they got near the earth, they'd drop one weight. They'd go back up. They could drop 18 different bombs or whatever. One was dropped in Oregon, one landed there, and they killed five children and a teacher. They got monkey on the bombers in there. And my boys, one of my Eskimo scouts was trap line, picked up one, loaded his plane, slept in it, there was a bomb all the time. And they picked up 18 of them. They put out a Thunder Farm shot by these Jap balloons. And it was a big story, but they took care of it. They'll do a great job, and I think if World War II comes, I hope it won't, but men always have fought, and men always will fight in this world. We're in that kind of a world. We're an armed camp, we are. And I think that they probably will knock out our blue line, and I think the best will come from Eskimo if the next attack comes. I told you about the most character I had, Paul Kosevnikov, and I don't know what else you want. Read this book, and you get the whole story. I'll present that to you. I'll say to you, Elat Negasuli. I was in the Kobuk River village during the war, and I had dinner at the Eskimo igloo. No furniture. Sit on the floor. They had frozen caribou and frozen meat, and a bowl of seal oil to dip in. I can eat that if I could those days. Paul Knox was the captain of the guard. He got up and left. I said to Paul Ballot, the lieutenant, I said, did Paul say, he said, Elat Negasuli. I said, did Paul say goodbye? He said, Major, no hello, no goodbye in the Arctic. We always been here, we always be here. I said, what did Paul say when he said, Elat Negasuli? Sometime again. They're delightful people. Elat Negasuli.
Potlatch is produced by KUAC under Title I of the Higher Education Act.